Hello, my name's Guy Somerset. I'm the Books and Culture editor of The Listener. And this is the last of this year's Listener Book Club podcast discussions. This month we've been talking about The Phoenix Song by John Sinclair, a debut novel set in China during the upheaval of the post-revolutionary years. With me to discuss the book this month, we have Stella Chrysostomo of Page and Blackmore Booksellers down in Nelson, Todd Atticus of Unity Books in Wellington, and Bronwyn Wiley-Gibb of the University Bookshop in Otago. And I'm going to start with you on this one, Stella. What were some of the things you liked about this novel, assuming there were things you liked about this novel?
There were things I liked about it. The Phoenix Song is, it's a big read. You know, it's quite detailed, it's quite descriptive. So it took me a little bit to kind of find my rhythm with it. But once I did, I really enjoyed it. I'm quite interested in politics, and I'm quite interested in communist politics. So this, it would, I had quite a bit of background going into this book, I guess, and I felt that he really captured the time and the sort of unusual political system, really, because you've got a lot of change, and I thought it was quite clever using a young girl's view of this, the young girl that's put in position.
Given that you say you have read a little bit around the subject before, did it seem, did it tally with what you had read? Did it seem an authentic view of life
in those times? His research is excellent, yeah. And I think he didn't fall into the trap of being polemic, which he could have. So I think that is good. Because, of course, people were quite divided about communist China. And there are some kind of quite harrowing stories that do come through, but it is in a quite interesting way by looking at it through this young girl's eyes, so that, you know, she's kind of ignorant at some point, and then the story, as it develops, different things are revealed.
Todd, is this an area that you were familiar with beforehand?
Actually, it wasn't at all, Guy. One of the things sometimes as a reader I dread is launching myself into a novel and then finding myself almost in the deep end. So I had to kind of take a bit of a plunge onto Wikipedia beforehand just to remind myself of some of the political turns and upheavals in China during the last century. Otherwise it would have fallen into a little bit of a black hole in my knowledge base. Thankfully, I think John Sinclair writes this story with a nice gesture towards the reader who may come to it a little bit blind to some of the things. I'm really jealous of you, though, actually, having had that knowledge base beforehand and going into it. I'm sure there's even more that you can kind of unravel from the text. What I feel John Sinclair does really well from a perspective of someone who isn't as well versed in the history is just it delivers a story in moments. So as you move through the novel, you get different passages of time, and he is very, very skillful and very adept at describing these places that the young violinist who is our kind of vehicle through this novel, these moments and places that she inhabits throughout, and the kind of creeping shadows at the sidelines of the politics that are happening in the background. They never take too much of the foreground in that. It doesn't become either one way or the other. It doesn't become outlandishly over political, but it has personal resonance as well. So I enjoyed it from those two perspectives.
Bronwyn, this is a debut novel from a New Zealander. This is quite an ambitious plot and setting for a debut novel by a New Zealander. Obviously, all novels are feats of imagination, but this is a particular imaginative leap required to place himself in this time and in this place. Did that work for you?
It did. And in actual fact, I don't think it really matters that he's a New Zealander at all. The little New Zealand bits in it didn't work for me.
That didn't work.
Yeah, I was far more interested in this history of China, especially because I didn't know really anything about the early revolution in China. Like, I'd heard all the stuff and had read books about the Cultural Revolution and those sorts of things, but I didn't know about the first sort of 10 years, and I found that fascinating. And I had recently been reading something, and I can't remember what it was, where they had talked about the city of Harbin and about how Russian exiles had fled there after the Russian Revolution. So I found that really interesting in the way that he pulled it together, and he created a world that was completely believable, and I really enjoyed that, how you just got completely pulled in. And as Todd said, the shadows in the background that are constantly moving of what's going on politically, and how people say one thing and do another, and how everybody has to pretend, not even pretend, but accept that this is the way things are because this is what we're being told, even if what you can see and what you know is completely different. That way of living, I find it really hard to imagine, having grown up in New Zealand, to imagine what it's like to have to live like that. And I think he captures that amazingly well.
You said that the New Zealand bits themselves don't really work for you. What is it about them that don't work?
I know Wellington very well, and I it just didn't resonate in any way with me. I didn't feel it mattered that New Zealand was where she ended up.
In a way, perhaps it would have been it's bold already, but just that's one more step of boldness to not even bother to have any New Zealand element to it at all.
I don't think it needed anything. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, she could have stayed in France, and that would have been fine. It was just so interesting about China, and then about the experience of being in France as part of the Chinese sort of delegation, and in the other communist countries that they visited before she ended up going to France. I found all that quite enough. Didn't need it to be attached to New Zealand, and it didn't really. Why on earth would they have ended up in New Zealand? It never really gets quite explained.
I totally agree with you, Bronwyn. I think it feels tagged on the end, like a kind of quite a tokenistic gesture, as if almost John Sinclair kind of wants to still tether it to New Zealand in a way, and it just didn't seem like it would flow naturally. It's plausible, but quite what service it does to the story, I'm not really sure.
It doesn't need it.
China is a big country and it's a big subject, particularly during these years. But I think one of the great things about the book is he's managed to find this kind of micro area of it, Harbin, which has this amazing, unique history of its own. What did you think of Harbin as a setting, Stella?
I thought it was fantastic. It was really interesting. As Bronwyn said, that part of the history, especially about the white Russian migrants that live there, I hadn't come across that before, despite my reading around China, and I found that absolutely fascinating. I think because he lived there, he described the city so beautifully, and you could really, as you're reading, you could really just see yourself in that setting. And he also developed the time and the place, you know, very nicely, with just little glances and glimpses, and just the odd sentence that I think he's in the first chapter. The young girl, there was a lovely chapter about her father's had a stroke and he can't see the doorway to go through. And just an aside to that, just in a little aside, he's got this thing about an old Chinese man on a horse and cart, and the way he just describes it and brings in the feeling of the dust and the heat and that moment, you know, really takes you there. So I think he obviously enjoyed living there, and you can see that coming through in the writing. He's also researched it really well, and I just found the whole thing about the white Russians being absolutely fascinating.
The danger of historical novels is always that, and the novels in countries other than your own, is that the research weighs heavily and inanimates, as it were, the story. I didn't get that sense here. He really does seem to have immersed himself in it enough to not be teaching us, as it were, about these times. So what did you think, Todd?
I agree, for the main part, certainly. At times, and these were few and far between, but they were still enough to jar a little for as a reader. I felt that it turned slightly into a little bit more of a functional language that he uses. I can almost sense his kind of previous employment as a kind of political writer shining through slightly. You get ideas or kind of a size in parenthesis just to add a kind of a little bit more texture maybe or knowledge, but I think what it does slightly is jar. But as I say, that's few and far between. Otherwise, it's quite nicely streamlined and woven in the history and the personal dynamic of the story. A little bit about Harbin as well, the piece that Stella was describing a moment ago. Now, this novel, I think, I read an interview with John Sinclair, and it took him about 10 years to write. I'm going to hazard a guess that he wrote that first part and took a lot of those 10 years on that first section of the novel. It just feels so textural and beautifully composed. I think the second half of the novel was just slightly let down in that it feels a little bit more sparse, and I think that first part just has such promise because, as I say, I can just feel that he spent a lot of time using his own experiences of living there just to inform those sections, those first, I don't know, five chapters, I'd say.
It's a relatively big book for a first novel, I think it's about 350 pages. Does it merit that length? Did it need that length, do you think, Stella?
No, I think there are parts that could have been cut back. There's quite a lot of when the young Raylan of Xiao Michael moved to Shanghai, where she's in the music school, the conservatory there. There's a whole bit about her spying on the teachers, and because she can understand Russian and they are a lot of them are Russian. And I just felt that kind of was overplayed. We've really kind of got the idea. So there was a little bit in there that could have been sort of edited back a bit because it was kind of repetitive. And I, again, agreeing with Roman and Todd, that ending, the New Zealand chapter, just didn't need to be there, really. It just didn't add to the story. So, yeah, but because it is a complex history, it's only overfill in part. It's kind of like you still would need quite a bit there, but it could have been tightened up a bit. There was some descriptive text that just was unnecessary.
One of the recurring criticisms, both from our reviewer Nicholas Reed, and also we haven't posted it as we speak, but by the time people will be able to listen to this podcast, they'll be able to see it from our book group. One of the recurring criticisms was characterisation, which people felt there wasn't much internal life to these characters, a lot of external life to them, a lot of plot, a lot of activity, but they didn't feel they got a real sense of the characters, not even of the lead character, useless at pronouncing these things, Exia, who knows, anybody know? How would you pronounce her name?
Oh, is it Xian, I think, or?
Xiao.
But how did you feel Bronwyn in terms of characterization, both of her and more generally?
Well, it was really interesting. I got to the end of the novel and I'd really liked it, and then I sort of thought, but who is she? I mean, all these things happen to her, and she's sort of quite passive, riding on these sort of waves of history. And then I suddenly thought afterwards, and I thought, well, she's this young woman, and you see her in adolescence and as a young 20-year-old, and she never kind of falls in love or gets a crush on anyone, and she never really has a much of a connection with anybody. Really, and it's quite strange. And then I thought, well, maybe it's supposed to sort of be her parents were both so devoted to the communist cause, and that's what came first. And there's a sort of odd disconnection and formality, or to my eyes, between her parents and her. And maybe that's just how life was. That really it was all about the greater glory of China and the revolution and Mao, and there wasn't much time or space, so maybe it gives a sense of that, but I didn't feel much connection to her, and I felt it was more about the story and this big story that was sort of happening in the background. It didn't bother me that it wasn't particularly characterful, but it would be interesting to know what sort of book it would be if you felt more of a connection to her as a person and knew a bit more about her life other than that she could play the violin and that she had parents who were in the Communist Party.
It's odd, I didn't really even think about that until suddenly the review appeared and I thought, oh yes, that's right, we haven't really gone inside these characters very much, have we? Todd, what did you think?
If I was to kind of ladle any severe criticism on this novel, and I don't want to, but it is in the fact that this main character is just a, quite a faceless vehicle. I mean, mindful of the fact that she's young and she probably wouldn't have as complex a kind of inner monologue as maybe a more mature character would. The fact that you so rarely get a glimpse inside her head, you don't even hear her speak that frequently. It does leave you cold after a while, and it makes you, I don't know, it's you realize that she's just a vehicle to advance the plot, and she's not fully rendered in herself. The one thing that I thought maybe was a deliberate ploy on behalf of Sinclair, she talks very early on about taking photos of family members, and she talks about the role of the photographer being someone who is, through being the observer, through having this kind of perspective, the place where the photograph is taken, she becomes more rendered, more solidly. And I thought that was kind of an interesting way of thinking about that whole, the novel itself as being, she's the pivot around which everything spins. And maybe Sinclair's thinking that we'll be able to sense who she is through her interactions and through the way that other people interact with her. I'm not sure it's successful, but I wonder whether that's what's driving that decision to leave her as somewhat of a kind of blank slate.
Leaving aside her, Stella, what about some of the other characters? Would you have liked to have been a bit more inside some of those at all?
I felt that there were a lot of characters in there that didn't need to be there. They were quite sort of two-dimensional cut-outs, and it was kind of like they were a little bit distracting, some of the minor characters. Also, the relationship she has with her mother's adoptive parents, who are white Russians, they were really interesting, but you didn't kind of get to know them any more than apart from her sort of young child's view of them, and you get a little glimpse here and there about the release they received from their son, who's still back in Russia. But not enough to kind of build a really sort of gritty picture of these characters. And I did feel like the situation where she gets Paris and she does defect after a while, and what happens, I won't give it away, but what happens there should have had more of an impact on her psyche. It was quite dramatic, but it's kind of... It was really interesting. I read this book about 3.5 weeks ago, so I just glimpsed over it again last night to refresh, and I thought, well, you know, how come that isn't made a bigger deal of? How come that doesn't have more of an impact on her? You know, it felt like, as Todd said, she's a vehicle for the plot more than... rather than getting inside her mind. So I think that could have been developed more strongly. But I felt all the way through most of the characters were kind of underplayed and underwritten.
At the risk of putting words into anybody's mouth, a flawed read more than a failed read? Stella?
I don't think it's flawed or failed. I think it does have a lot of merit, and I just wanted a bit more from the characters. It's quite interesting because when I started reading this, it reminded me of Robin Hyde's memoir that she wrote about travelling through China and about the sort of machinations and the kind of ridiculous things that happen and the bureaucracy. You know, that really comes through very strongly. So I felt that it reflected the time really well. So the historic novel, it works, and maybe a bit more development on the characters and giving them a bit more depth would
made it an excellent
read rather than a good read. Top? I think I'd use the word flawed, but then, you know, the most respectful, nicest way one would, it's a debut novel, and I think that's probably the context in which that this sits very nicely. There's a lot of ideas, there's a lot of things coming into this novel, and I'd be intrigued to see if should Sinclair move forward and write more, whether... a bit more refinement, maybe a filtering would happen, because I think there's just slightly, it's trying to be maybe a bit showy, there's too much coming into it, and maybe a shorter, more focused piece would be, would be a better one.
Bronwyn?
You notice that there's not much character development, but it doesn't particularly bother me. I still really like the book, and I came to it thinking, God, I have to read this book for this book club thing, and which I'd agreed to do, and I was feeling really resentful about it.
that's the way we like it.
And I read it, and by the second chapter, I was just gripped by it, and I was just reading it, and it wasn't until afterwards that I thought, actually, I don't really know any of these people. I don't know quite what they were thinking. So it's, I don't know if it's thought. It's just he writes so well, and I got so interested in what he was writing about that it's just a thing that you notice. I don't know that for me it wasn't. I wouldn't say it was a flaw. Mm.
Right. Well, that's good. I think hopefully lots of people will go off and give him a go.
Mm.
I better let you all get back to selling books. How is that going in this run-up to Christmas? Stella, going well? Lots of people in there?
It's going well. It's starting to get quite busy, some moments of madness, so may books be wonderful presents for everybody.
And Todd, I was in your shop at the weekend, saw you pretty busy in there.
Yeah, it's we've entered into the first week, I think, of really frantic Christmas buying, which is great to see. It's that exciting period as well where publishers bring in the last of their Christmas titles. So suddenly overnight there's lots of new things that weren't there last week. So, yeah, it's going to be a good one, I hope.
And how about you, Bronwyn, down there?
Yeah, no, we're finding the same thing. It's always sort of very exciting when all the new Christmas stock comes in and people are starting to come in and look and think about it. And, you know, every sort of literary publication in the world is now putting out its best of 2012 books and that sort of thing. And it's great. There's always something for everybody. Mm.
And just finally, a question I always ask booksellers, and sometimes they have an answer to this, sometimes they don't. What's selling? What's the big title so far this year? Or is it a bit too early to say for Christmas? Stella?
The book that we're selling a lot of at the moment is local publication, Craig Bottom Publishing, the book about the backcountry huts.
Oh, yes, that's a lovely book, isn't it?
It's beautiful, it's fantastic, you know, it's just flying out the door.
And Todd?
The Booker shortlist is having a renaissance, which is quite nice. It's a really strong list this year, a lot of diversity on it, and that's being strong regardless of the fact that Mantel won, and that's a superb bit. But it's actually quite notable for us. It's spread, it's quite nice. But the Buller's Birds is going to be a fantastic gift. I think that'll go very quickly.
Yes, absolutely. Bronwyn?
Yeah, it's local publishing that's big. As Stella said, the Craig Potton, especially the New Field Guide to New Zealand Magic.
Ah, yes, the one that you can actually take with you.
Absolutely. Buller's Birds is very exciting. And novels are sort of a bit slow, but people are buying more widely. There's no one big novel that anybody has to have for Christmas, it doesn't feel like. People are buying sort of across a wide range of things. Yeah.
There are a lot of, doing the 100 Best Books, our own inevitable 100 Best Books, there were a lot of novels this year, actually, a lot of very good novels, more than perhaps in previous years. Well, thank you all very much. I'll probably ask you this question the other side of Christmas in February when the book club returns. We're having a holiday over the Christmas period. But hopefully all three of you will be back to contribute next year. Bronwyn, looking forward to making you read some books reluctantly.
that's what book clubs are about, really.
Exactly,
isn't it?
Yes, pushing you into places you might not normally go. Well, thanks.
And you find treasure.
Exactly, hopefully we do. I think we found a fair bit of treasure this year. So thank you very much indeed, and yes, until February.